Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
I guess you can use this as a chance to rekindle your friendship.
Well, that's the whole point. It's an American tradition. Two old buds hitting the road. It's Easy Rider.
Brandon, that film ended with both writers being blown to bits.
Guess that means it didn't have a happy ending, huh?
Worst.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 17, Sweating It Out. Yeah! Sweating it out! Now here are your host, Tari Arons.
Hello!
Hello!
Nailed the intro this week.
You did. You figured it out.
Derp.
Good job, Dave.
David!
Reminders that you can...
Derelict my balls.
Yep. You can purchase shirts inspired by this podcast at glarkware.com. Yep. You can help us out by writing us a nice review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you use. And also, you can buy an ad on this podcast. It's $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message. And you can find more information at previously.tv/ads. More to add, Dave?
More to add?
More to add on ads or anything else?
Yes, please buy more ads.
Yeah. All right, let's...
extra D's for Dave. Moving on.
Let's proceed with our C story. The Peach Pit After Dark is a matter of concern for many. So now,
not for us, but no, here we go.
But for others. Now that Steve isn't involved in the Peach Pit After Dark anymore, we hear his voiceover as he's telling someone what a shit show it's going to be while we watch Nat, David, and Claire putting everything together. And then we see he's having this conversation in the Peach Pit, which is really douchey, but I guess can't beat the price, which is free. and he's telling all this to Muntz, whose outfit, by the way, is insane. He's got a fucking newsboy cap on and overalls. Like, pick a look, buddy. You can see in the visual aids at previously.tv.
Is he trying out for newsies? What the hell?
I don't know. Steve wraps up by claiming that the day he got sentenced to stay away was the best day of his life. Okay, dude. And then when Nat appears behind the counter, Steve two-facedly asks him how it's all going. Nat is enthusiastic, just in time for us to see that Jason Priestley directed this one, so yikes. Claire comes in wearing, as Sarah said in her visual aids, all the makeup, and boy is she ever, and her eyebrows are so plucked, it looks painful. Anyway, she comes in with compliments for Rush. Muntz is happy that things are going to work out because he doesn't understand the purpose he's meant to serve here for Steve. And Steve, of course, is pissed and stomps into the Peach Pit After Dark, where Rush is literally standing on the stage to hold court with a story about being at the Folies Bergère with Shecky Green. You know how teenagers love stories about that. Seeing his friend's adulation of his hated father deflates Steve's rage boner, and he just slinks out instead of saying anything. Later, Claire, David, and Rush celebrate the imminent opening of the Peach Pit After Dark. Rush wants to know where this Ray character has played before, which is an awkward question because he's currently in the showroom having stage fright while Donna tries to talk him down in clip number 2.
Ray, what is the worst thing that can happen to you?
Worst thing that could happen? I get up on stage to sing, I open my mouth, and nothing comes out. Then I puke, then I die.
Ray.
I know you went out on a limb to get me this gig, but I'm telling you, it's just too soon.
Well, you're always going to feel that way until you make some sort of effort to deal with your stage fright. Now, just stand up there on stage and try to find something to focus on.
Right, like looking at a light is going to make me feel better about tomorrow.
Okay, then you tell me, what would make you feel better?
How about getting Stowe to play on the beat? Or how about a new bridge for I Know the Game? Because the way the song goes now, it just doesn't work.
Your songs are fine. Your bass player is fine.
Everything's fine.
I just love any argument that ends with, what's the worst that could happen? I could die. I mean, that is literally the worst that could happen. It's a pretty intense stage fright, though. Also worth noting, as they're having this conversation, Ray is standing in front of this big, like, metal sign thing that they made for the Peach Pit After Dark to hang behind at the back of the stage, which is a peach, fine. But then in front of it is a flying toaster. Like, I know it's the 90s, but why? Why a flying toaster? What about that says After Dark? I don't understand. It's stupid. Kids, ask your parents what a flying toaster was in the 90s. Anyway, Donna goes to Steve to ask about motivating Ray, and a friendly chat gets ugly very fast in clip number 3.
Remember when we were in high school at the Pigskin prom when you were David's manager, and right before he went on, he was really nervous? What did you say to him?
I told him, get out there or I'll break your fingers. That seemed to do the trick.
Well, do you think you could say that to Ray? He's supposed to go on tomorrow night, but he's paralyzed with stage fright, and I don't know what to do.
Why don't you just sleep with him?
Funny.
No, it's not funny. And frankly, it's quite insensitive of you to come here and ask me advice on anything even remotely connected with the Peach Pit After Dark.
I'm sorry, I just assumed.
Well, don't assume. Don't assume anything other than it's very painful for me to watch you, David, and Claire. This was my idea, and now it's Rush's idea? Don't assume anything, okay?
I thought this was the best thing that ever happened to you, Steve.
Well, also, I know he's been bitching about this for, like, whatever, 2 months in Showtime.
Yeah.
But, like, wasn't he actually in charge of it for, like, an episode and a half? Yeah. If that?
Yeah.
You're not Steve Jobs.
That's a good joke. Donna starts to slink off, but Steve isn't actually a bad person, gets over himself enough to tell her to inspire him, to inspire Ray by going to the master, Vince Lombardi. Oh, God. So the news of Ray's stage fright trickles down to David via Claire, which is when we find out Donna is watching Vince Lombardi pep talk videos at the Keg House. Munz tries to cheer up Steve by saying that the Peach Pit After Dark is bullshit anyway. I'm paraphrasing. Munz apparently tried to get a couple of their brothers not to go to the opening out of loyalty to Steve, but they went anyway, and now Munz is too. On his way out, Munz passes Rush coming in, and Rush has come to say he's sorry in clip 4.
Well, thanks. I feel a lot better now.
Well, I'm glad you do, because I feel lousy.
Please, I saw you at the club holding court. Why don't you just go back there, flirt with Donna and Claire a little more, show them what a stand-up guy you really are.
Steve, I didn't mean to cut you out of the picture.
Yes, you did. That's why you made that deal.
I tried to keep you from getting busted. It was the best deal I could make.
That was the best you could do?
Yes.
Yeah.
You think Ted Stone and his attorneys listen to me? All I am to them is Samantha Sanders' ex-husband. Listen, I really don't give a damn how popular this joint gets. Because it doesn't mean anything to me unless you're there being a part of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not allowed to be. Thanks to you.
I don't know about that. I really don't think a magistrate's gonna be there checking IDs tonight. Do you? Come on. Come to the club with me.
You're not exactly my idea of a dream date, but you buy, I'll fly.
Come here.
Ooh, Dad.
Dad.
Whatever.
Fucking Ayn's earring emoting. No, thank you. And opening night is a success. Even boring old married people show up. Hi, Andrea and Jesse. Claire reports to David that Ray didn't say much, but that he swears he'll be okay. And if David wants to tell Ray he can't play, he can go right ahead. And then Lombardi fucking stuff is going on in the back. Donna has the stage set up chalked out like a football play. And then after all this buildup, we do not see Ray play at all. Music rights.
Thank you.
Yep. Moving on to our B story. Kelly meets a charismatic professor, but it's probably no big deal. So the doorbell rings at the Walsh house. It's Kelly. She's had yet another haircut, by the way. It's like still bad, but in a different way. Brandon is about to leave on a road trip, which we will get to, but she's found something to occupy herself while she's gone. Clip number 5.
Look what I got invited to.
$200 for a one-day workshop?
No, no, they gave it to me for free for getting an A in abnormal psych.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, obviously, Patrick Finley doesn't work cheap.
Who's Patrick Finley?
He's one of the most popular professors on campus.
He's practically reinventing the field of modern psychology.
He has this very unorthodox theory.
It's called the new evolution.
I thought they were still arguing about the old evolution.
Oh, dad joke.
But also, guess we're going to be, given the people that are on the short list for Secretary of Education. Sorry. moving on.
Oh, we won't be arguing about it.
No, we won't.
It will no longer exist.
Yes. Upstairs, canoodling is interrupted by Val, who also got an A in the class and an invitation to the workshop. And Kelly is hilariously disappointed not to be so special after all. Val wasn't going to go, but now that Kelly is, she's going to go too. And she leaves. Kelly's a bitch about it. Brandon daddishly scolds her and she pouts that she'll be nice. So then after the same B-roll of the Beverly Hilton from when Stuart and Brenda were living there, Val and Kelly walk into a ballroom for this big workshop. And they already, by the way, given what's about to happen, they already look like sister wives in their ankle-length dresses, which you can see in the visual aids of previously not TV. Val asks if Kelly wouldn't rather be shopping, and Kelly tells her to ask in a couple of hours. Kelly is spotted by a TA named Sarah, who graded Val's paper but doesn't recognize her. Val claims she's been absent due to illness. In fact, she's still not over it and might have to leave early. Oh, Val, always thinking. And then one of Finley's grad students comes out to give the very chilling intro in clip 6.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dan McGrath, and I am one of the 6 grad students with swanky name tags who will be assisting Patrick Finley over what should be a very illuminating session. Feel safe, people. There are no externs here. No distractions.
What is an extern? Let me introduce the man who an outsider, critical of someone else's search for meaning.
Come. Oh, now, the right. Of, professor of course. Begin
to convey the importance of this man in each of our lives. Please welcome Patrick Finley.
I have 3 words for you. We have evolved. Yes.
I have 3 words for you. Would you like to guess what they are? Go. Okay.
Oh, I was thinking it would be fuck right off, but either way. Well,
you're half right.
So Findlay's lecture is some nonsense. Val is bored and wants to go shopping. Here's what we hear in clip 7.
What we are is something else entirely. We feel it every day of our lives, the possibility of something greater. We are, each of us, Homo lucens, shining man.
Brother.
But we're in limbo, aren't we?
Valerie.
Cut off from our past, unable to reach our destiny, incapable of changing even our own lives.
But Val almost makes this worthwhile because she makes a lot of hilarious faces. while Kelly is transfixed, Finley calls for them to break into groups. Val is ready to peace out, which is when Sarah, the TA, starts working Kelly for real in clip number 8.
Kel, don't let her influence you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you're trying to change your life, the last thing you need is some negator holding you back.
Right.
Is she?
Instantly, she's like, yep, you're right. None of this is alarming to me at all. That's how dumb I am. Like, what did you learn in your ab psych class or any other class or
yeah,
from
you took
anything
it 4 times.
Read?
Get a grip.
Seriously. So in her group, Kelly wonders why she's at the workshop, but Sarah knows exactly what to tell her. Still, in clip number 9, this one is long, but it covers a lot of like this, I was going to say theology, this whole philosophy that's going to be an issue in the next several episodes. So strap in.
Dumbagoggery.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Then let's get back to the fire. You said you thought your life would be different afterwards. How?
My mother was a model, so growing up, I was always really worried about how I looked. And part of me still thinks that that's important. But compared to almost dying in a fire, it seems pretty meaningless. Well, not meaningless. It's a big part of everyone's life.
Listen up. We are trying to create a moment of clarity by sharing one truth about our own lives. It's that simple. Don't analyze.
Oh, is that what I was doing?
Please. Look, are you happy with your life? Just give me a simple answer to my simple question.
It's not a simple question.
Believe me, it is.
But everyone's life is...
Forget about everyone. You don't know about everyone. Tell me about you. It'll never be easier than right this second. Set aside your fears, Kelly. Tell the truth.
In the fire, when the flames came through the door, everything stopped for me. I could hear my own thoughts. And I was thinking, please, God, don't burn my face. Burn the other girl if you have to, but don't take me. This other girl, Allison, had saved my life. And that's what I was thinking. And she nearly died. I want to change my life. But I don't know how.
That
is an idea. The next time you're trapped in a fire, go out the window that's 2 inches above your fucking head, you maroon.
Also, even if it's true that you thought, please take this other girl and not me, don't ever say that out loud to people. That's something you should be extremely ashamed of and never admit, ever.
Well, but that's how we get some.
Oh, of course.
Emotional blackmail. I mean, I don't know. Like, I have always loved this subplot because it's really dumb, because it makes everyone think Kelly's a bitch. Like... even though it's not her fault. Claire's reactions to her are great. And because I think they actually did a pretty good job of this, like, culty, like, lingo and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I've always liked this plot, even though it's, like, super cringy.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, Kelly comes home all abuzz about having had what Findlay called practically a breakthrough ascendancy, but everyone else is all wrapped up in Peach Pit After Dark drama and no one cares. So Kelly is forced to go to Findlay's office and is surprised and jumpy when he hears her out in the hall and opens the door because she can change her mind and take off. He remembers her, which he claims he normally doesn't. Classic. She brought him a letter detailing how much the workshop meant to her. He's kind and encouraging, which apparently emboldens her to ask a question that's none of her business in clip number 10.
When you ended up in the wheelchair, was that when you started evolving?
Well, hopefully that's been going on my entire life, but the accident, well... I don't want to give you the wrong impression because I truly love to ski, but you know from the fire, it is a gift to have something suddenly put your whole life into focus.
What?
Right now all I see is that I'm not really who I want to be.
Well, fortunately, you're still evolving. You can change your life, Kelly. But I should warn you, a lot of people are not going to understand what you're after.
I don't care. That's what I want to do.
Oh, boy. Well, already beginning to distance her from her loved ones. Wonder if that's going to be an issue in the coming episodes. I guess we'll see.
But it's first, probably nothing.
Nah, probably nothing. You're right. But first, we have a message from Sarah, not the Sarah from the workshop and not Sarah D. Bunting. Different Sarah. This Sarah tells us that her oldest and bestiest friend in the world, Jean Bistel, turns 47 this week.
In addition to being longtime pop culture obsessives, Sarah and birthday girl Jean were both editors on their high school newspaper, The Purple and Gray.
Great name. A lot of parents didn't read it, they tell us. But that doesn't mean we can't be pretty sure that Jean was a better editor than the Blazes. And here are five reasons why.
Number one, Jean wouldn't have ceded her leadership to a tin pot fascist in giant pants just because some bread-haired advisor thought she was too bossy or some bullshit.
Jean would have known that if she got assigned to reviews a friend's restaurant, she'd decline because she knows what a conflict of interest is. Granted, that was post-Blaze for Andrea, but the point still stands.
Jean wouldn't have wasted her time acting like a poor little rich boy's memoir was worth distracting her from breaking important stories like the cafeteria expose.
Jean would have been too protective of her legacy to dismiss the concerns of the juniors coming up behind her. They don't want a dress code, okay?
Jean wouldn't feed her newborn anything that would cause her to make a sound like this.
From all of us here.
And especially your friend Sarah without an H.
Happy birthday, Jean.
Happy birthday.
And now our A plot, once again, using that letter loosely, Brandon and Dylan in reparations. Brandon and his giant pants, which you can see in the visual aids, run into Dylan behind the peach pit. They're back to their faux Spanish level of jocularity and, of course, on another fucking break from school. Brandon is not going to Big Bear or Palm Springs, but it's Dylan's last hurrah before he goes on probation and loses his license. So Dylan is going on a road trip to Lake Whitney and invites Brandon to join him. Dylan is going on his motorcycle. We get it. You're straight. Seeing Brandon with the one sleeping bag that might haven't eaten in the garage, Cindy gets concerned about him and Dylan sleeping outside and wants them to take the station wagon instead. Brandon's response is tone in clip 11.
Mom, I know I haven't ridden a bike in a while, but we're going to be fine.
No, Dylan doesn't exactly have a great driving record.
Daddy's past his toxic stage.
Are you?
Mom, fuck off. I would have gotten knocked into next week for any, like, a tenth of that tone. He's the worst.
Yes, he is.
When Dylan shows up, Cindy resumes expressing her worries about the trip, but at least Brandon is very prepared. Apparently he knows how to build a campfire because he was a Boy Scout, clip 12.
Once a wee blow, always a wee blow.
See, why is everyone else giving us grief for talking about how short he is when he's saying he's still a wee blow?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to brag about your Boy Scout skills, shouldn't you have graduated from Weebalonia? It's between Cubs and Boy Scouts, right?
I think so. It's definitely like junior to Boy Scouts. So, yeah, whatever, dude. Dylan promises to
take
care of...
More like Wee Braylo.
Dylan promises to take care of Brandon, and then Kelly comes to the stairs to say goodbye to both her dudes, and she and Dylan share a significant look, capital S, capital L, right in front of everybody. What even is going on with these two idiots now? We can't focus on that at the moment because then we have to watch these two jabronis on their stupid bikes on the highway forever. And then they're ordering dinner from an improbably attractive diner waitress in a very improbably short black impractical uniform, whom they both ogle openly. They're also sitting on the same side of the table because I guess they're that couple. Single on Sandra's ensue in clip 13.
How's the apple pie? Is it homemade?
Baked myself in my own little oven.
I'd like to see that oven.
You and me both.
Can we see your oven?
Take a number.
What?
Get on with it.
Dave, thoughts?
Sorry, I was only half paying attention to that clip. Was that like some sort of oven sex metaphor thing going on there?
The oven's yes. Her vagina.
Yep.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
Yuck. Stud mania out of control.
I'm sorry to say this exchange still makes me want apple pie though. Sorry, everybody.
Me too, with cheese and ice cream.
Yep. When the waitress has left, Brandon wants to tell him a task force story, but Dylan, like the rest of us, is not interested because Dylan is in control of his faculties, but also for other reasons in clip 14.
And pie for dinner? Dude, I'm having whatever she's bringing me, okay? Health is overrated. On this trip, feeding my soul. Man, the last time I heard somebody talking about feeding their soul, I was in Washington on task force business. Oh, please. No, this is good. I walk into this reception. There's Lucinda Nicholson, right?
Oh, man, the last person I want to hear about is Lucinda.
No, this is a funny story, I'm telling you.
It's not a funny story. Every time I hear a name, I get reminded how she tried to hustle me into financing that stupid documentary while you were off for the weekend hustling Kelly.
Father told me we'd be fighting before we got to the campground.
Well, I just didn't want us to not have anything to talk about, you know?
What would you like to talk about, Jack Kerouac?
Hey, yeah, let's talk about Jack Kerouac.
Okay, let's talk about Jack Kerouac. I ran on the road. I hated it.
What do you mean you hated it?
I hated it. I read the Dharma Bums. I hated that, too.
What are my boys doing?
I hate to agree with Brandon on anything, but he's right. On the road is fucking terrible. I had to read it
for school. I liked it when I was 19, but I was 19.
Even that's when I read it too, and I did not care for it. But I also don't believe that Brandon read it like voluntarily.
No, and he definitely didn't read Dharma Bums because nobody actually gets through that shit. They just say they do.
So later, Brandon calls Kelly from the motel under its boom mic, of course, and tells her it's just him, Dylan, and the open wound. She thinks he meant open road, but he's like, nope. And then Dylan comes out of the bathroom drying his hair. He's shirtless, but he has his jeans back on, even though he's about to go to bed. Like, Brandon can't just see him in his boxers. This is starting to seem a lot gayer anyway than it's a fight in clip 15.
He didn't have to wait till I got in the shower to call her, you know.
Well, thanks for telling me that. I could call her back if you want to say goodnight, too.
You got a problem?
No, I don't have a problem. But any question I had about our friendship was answered by the way you looked after seeing Kelly at my house.
Look, don't talk to me about Kelly, all right? I don't want to hear about Kelly anymore. Why don't we just get all the stuff together and get back on the road tomorrow?
Sure, we'll get back on the road, and I'll be watching your license plate all day.
Is it my fault you can't keep up with me? I don't think so.
Okay, I'll make it a no-brainer. I'll just go back to L.A. tomorrow morning.
Why don't you just go back tonight?
Because I already paid for the room.
Good night.
What if people wanted to read in bed, dickwad?
Yeah.
He's still wearing all his clothes and the customary like long sleeve Henley with the like button down rolled up to the elbows over it. Mm-hmm. Hate.
Yep. So dumb. The next morning, Dylan and Brandon are packing up. Dylan is prepared to go back to LA with Brandon and cut the trip short because Brandon is a terrible motorcyclist, apparently. But it's also because he's worried about the bike that he borrowed for Brandon. Brandon doesn't want to ruin Dylan's road trip, and Dylan tells him not to. Then they can just keep going and just not talk about Kelly anymore. Brandon seems to have, by the way, already fucked up the left headlight of George's bike that he borrowed. See in the visual aids. Tell me I'm wrong. Then Brandon and Dylan stop and pee on a tree with a no trespassing sign clearly labeled Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is Brandon's cue to get his Andrew Jackson on in clip 16.
Look at that. 200 miles from nowhere. Still no trespassing.
Hey, everything from the mountains to the beach is just real estate, man. Somebody owns every square inch of it.
Well, right now, this square yard belongs to me, my brother.
Yes, again. This is the Ingersoll Reservation, that sacred burial ground you're flooding.
A guy comes up behind
him. Is this some kind of cemetery?
Shouldn't you guys like market or something?
What do you think that is?
Listen, we're really sorry.
Let me see your licenses.
What, you're gonna give me a ticket?
Oh, for a start, dear Dylan.
Yeah. First of all, Brandon, when he calls it a burial ground, yes, that's a cemetery, you douche. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I don't understand why Dylan even has like this last hurrah with his license. It's not like an army induction. You don't get 2 weeks to like think about it and then surrender yourself.
Yeah, I wondered about that. It. That's what I thought. But yes, the attitude on, well, you're going to give me a ticket? Yes, you fucking entitled prick.
If Brandon, you're lucky, you just pissed on his ancestors. Maybe and some ingratiation?
He's right. It was marked like you could have just peed on the road. Whatever. Brandon acts like a good boy and hands over his ID, as does Dylan, after making a snotty production about it. But it turns out they're not getting a ticket. They're getting arrested and assigned to a work detail. Good. But in the meantime, Brandon has to be a fucking dick about it in clip 17.
Dylan, the guy has our driver's licenses. We said we'd do work detail.
Oh, no, Brandon. You said we'd do work detail.
All right, when the guy comes back, we'll tell him we'd rather be arrested on a reservation, where, for all I know, the United States Constitution doesn't even apply.
I don't even know where to begin with this.
Where can we? Begin.
You don't know what you're talking about and you are being racist. But anyway, the work detail that they're assigned is they have to, he's given them instructions on digging a 1 foot hole, which becomes a 2 foot hole when Brandon is a bitch about it. And there's only one shovel. Dylan's digging while Brandon, his supervisor, is in charge of QA, making sure the sides are and bottom are like flat. And as soon as, the sheriff is gone, Dylan tosses a shovel, but finally after Brandon yells at him, sorry, that clip was too early, I jumped the gun on that, my bad, we're out of sequence, whatever, Dylan agrees to dig, but refuses to accept Brandon's authority. Moving on, Dylan is digging when the sheriff comes back. Did you forget that they're on Indian land? By the way, don't. Clip 18.
This is going on throughout, by the way, but that one was just particularly like,
mm-hmm.
We got a whatever piccolo that sounded like a hawk, like Jesus, yeah. Christ.
The sheriff asks Brandon how Dylan's doing. Brandon puts on his heartiest voice to say that it's great, but it takes half a question for Brandon to admit that Dylan is half-assing his digging, which is when Dylan gives up and storms off. And the sheriff and Brandon discuss how angry Dylan is. Brandon asks if there's some other way for them to make amends, and the sheriff's like, nope, which cues another fight. Clip 19.
Look, bro, I agree this is totally unfair, but what am I supposed to do?
Oh, no, just do what you've been doing. Sit there fat and lazy while I'm sweating my ass off.
Fine, let me dig.
No way. Why, so I can hear you for the rest of my life telling everybody how you bailed me out? I don't think so.
Hey, it's my fault we're in this situation, okay? So let me dig for a while. When he comes back, we'll switch places. Okay, for a while.
Okay. The sheriff comes back to check. Brandon is now helping without a shovel. The sides and bottom still aren't up to snuff, but apparently the exercise is over as a truck full of dudes pulls up. Brandon and Dylan are free to go, though the sheriff, returning their ID, invites them to stay. And then we're watching the setup for a sweat lodge. First, a compliment. Clip 20.
Nice hole.
What? Native Play American it again. Sheriff 2020.
Nice hole.
Nice hole.
Yeah, save that one, Dave.
Yeah, we may have use for that again. Uh-huh. So Brandon has questions and actually manages to be respectful about it at first in clip 21.
Listen, we're really honored that you invited us to stay and everything, but what's going to go on in there?
Well, it's different for each person. Our tribe believes that when the Creator sat in Sweat Lodge, the human beings were formed from droplets of his sweat. Obviously, nothing that dramatic is going to happen today.
Well, what is going to happen?
Well, to say the very least, you'll sweat a lot.
Bro, I don't know about this. I mean, those rocks are white hot. Come on, you're a tough guy. You can handle it.
Yeah, I'm Minnesota tough. 20, 30 below, I can handle. But this, I'm seriously thinking about bowing out. You want to tell our host?
We're the Piccolo Hawk?
So I guess we're supposed to think that they feel coerced into it, but whatever. Later, Brandon and Dylan are in the sweat lodge sweating. Dylan is invited to pray and says he knows someone has been looking out for him the past few months. Brandon says he's glad Dylan's still alive so they can do this together and he'll never forget it. Wah, wah.
These prayers seriously sound like third grade book reports too. Like so fake and stagey that
yeah.
I'd have shoved them face first onto the rocks, but Sheriff's a nicer man than I.
They should have been kicked out for that bullshit. So the next day, Dylan decides that Lake Whitney would be anticlimactic after the sweat lodge. He's glad they did it. And they discuss what lesson they were supposed to have learned from the hole digging in clip 22.
You know, when I thought that somehow you could dig the perfect hole any better than I could, even though I somehow assumed it'd be easier for you, it hit me. We're all flawed. Nobody's perfect. Not me, not you, not anybody. Which is obvious. Once in a while, you just need a little reminder. Could be. But don't you think the point was more that you assumed I was out to get you, even though I wasn't? And that maybe if you give people the benefit of the doubt, you find out they're really on your side?
Yeah, anything's possible.
Possible? Oh, I'm sorry. Nobody's perfect is supposed to be a major revelation?
Okay, Brandon, I think maybe we better just, you know...
Talk less and ride more.
You talk less, I'll ride more.
Uh-huh.
Both of you talk less. You are insufferable.
Agree.
Let's wrap it up. Brandon and Dylan return to Dylan's house and a message from Jonesy in our final clip.
It's me, Jonesy. I'm at the Lost and Found with $8 million I think you might recognize. Grab your passport and some shades and get your boots down here without telling anyone. Do you call me my number?
Remember that thing that was happening? It's still happening.
It's happening. Punta Brava, here we come.
So, most valuable player of the episode. The fucking sheriff that made them dig a hole.
Sheriff Two Snakes. Nice hole yourself, sir.
Yep. Least valuable player. Brandon, who doesn't know how to act around people that are not the same as him. Some more, still, again, always.
Also doesn't know synonyms. Valid choice. I'm going to go with his girlfriend, Kelly, who got, like, inculcated in, like, 2 hours. That's
seriously
really amazing. Get a life.
Oh, my God. Yes. So let's do the Moo Moo Parker Challenge. 5 ways from this episode, Brandon might have ended up dead. Punched to death by Kelly because he's constantly condescending to her, even when he's right.
Brought back through the veil by vengeful Native American spirits.
garlic poisoning from his bad diner meal.
Punched to death in the face by the waitress for his crappy
sexual harassment. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I don't know, kicked into the Indian burial ground and swallowed by the earth for his disrespect.
How about he goes in the sweat lodge and he finds out his spirit animal is a manta bray?
Or shrivels up that he becomes this and becomes the actual size of an actual raisin.
And wow, horrible. That's 5 plus 2. Good job, everybody.
Next time on Again With This, Erica makes us want to put the punt back in Punta Brava when Dylan, Val, and Jonesy embark on the Great Trust Fund Retrieval Caper. Elsewhere, Professor Finley drives a wedge between Cat Buttmouth and El Presidente. You'll want to give a wedgie to our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other Again With This episode on our website at previously.tv. And you can follow that website on Twitter at previously.tv. I'm Nice Hole Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm here with my co-host, Dharma Bum Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. We Below David T. Cole is our producer. He's on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Nice hole.
That's a nice piece of business, We Below.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.